Good evening, and welcome to the Cabinet of Fever Dreams. Tonight, a tale of the tourism ministry, workouts, and a malevolent eldritch spirit. The Hundred-Eyed God, the Athlete, is a part of a shared universe series written during the pandemic of 2020, and episodes can be consumed in any order. Tonight's tale is read by Grax Bishop, with musical accompaniment by Petr Mrdjan. If you don't want to miss out on any episodes of The Hundred-Eyed God, feel free to hit whatever subscribe and rating button you have on your listening platform of choice. New chapters will be coming out every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. With that out of the way, put your earphones in, go for a jog, and never stop.
It's been 3 months since I've touched my wife. She spent the entirety of the pandemic living in the city with her sister, so that it would be easier for her to commute to the hospital. Now, with case numbers safely in the low two-digit territory, she is snoring gently on my chest. I wish I could fall asleep next to her, that I could let my tired, aching body rest and wake up to a world returning back to normal. But I can't. I know I did something wrong. I'm not completely certain of what I did. The memory of the past 3 months is an ungraspable fog that floats around my mind. But I know I've set in motion incomprehensible forces. Outside, the stars shine like 1,000 curious eyes waiting, watching to see how everything in our puny mortal realm will play out. And I know that I've been a small, sweaty puzzle piece in the events that are about to unravel. Whatever the terrors that are preparing to seize the night, a part of the responsibility lies with me. I have communed with eldritch powers, and I feel like I will soon have to pay the price. It all started when my stepdaughter called me fat. I've always thought that I was good with children. Every family gathering, I would try to have at least one conversation with my brother's kids, just to see what the younger generation was up to. I even considered putting together a tour of my company that would talk about the history of the city in a way that teens would find interesting. I've always thought that I was good with children, until I met my stepdaughter. She wasn't my stepdaughter back then. I was just some guy dating her mum. But our relationship hasn't changed a single bit in the years.
"He's too fat. Find someone else,"
Liz said, as soon as her mother introduced me. Apparently, this is how she treated every potential stepfather that was brought home. Apparently, she actually really liked me and would surely loosen up on the fat jokes once I've moved into the house, once I married her mother, once she got used to me. But she didn't. To Liz, I was just some fat guy who lived under her roof. She would make eye contact with me if I took seconds during dinner. This stupid grin would bounce around her face whenever she saw me walk upstairs, and she would never miss an opportunity to comment on my weight. The pandemic didn't change that. It was just the two of us. Her mother had already left to be closer to work, and we were eating dinner. On the television, a serious-looking man in a silly homemade mask was reading out the new rules for the pandemic. Lockdown, effective as of midnight. No leaving the house unless it's for grocery shopping, work, exercise, or to provide aid in family emergencies. Liz burst out laughing. "What's funny?" I asked, hoping I could steer the conversation to a talk about how difficult it is being 16 during a global pandemic. My hopes were in vain.
"I just imagined you exercising and it made me laugh,"
Liz said, with that giant grin on her face.
"Because you're fat,"
she added, as if her jab wasn't direct enough. I wasn't going to be hard on the kid. She was just dealing with the pandemic in her own way. But that insult pushed something in me. Every evening, my wife and me would talk on the phone. The plan was for me to fill her in on the daily happenings at home, but it became very clear that it wasn't my place to complain about her daughter. While I was going through domestic drama, she was dealing with equipment shortages, with double shifts, with constant chaos. I didn't want to bother her. After letting her vent her frustration about the situation, I told her everything was good at home, and that we were looking forward to seeing her in 2 weeks. She assured me it wouldn't be 2 weeks. I laid in bed waiting for sleep to come, but it didn't. Everything my wife said about the state of the hospitals, the fears about the future of the tourist industry, and inability to plan further than a month ahead, it all floated around my skull and I desperately clawed at rest. But beneath all that fear was something else. A sadness, a memory of being laughed at in high school. The chilling pain whenever my stepdaughter made her stupid jokes. I could see myself lying there in bed, a human manifestation of sadness, a weird slop. It felt like I was outside of myself, like I was some eerie floating eyeball watching a middle-aged man scowl at his belly.
"This can become a temple,"
I had thought. But it was as if it wasn't my own. It was as if the words floated around in my forehead on a gentle summer breeze. I watched myself get out of bed, look in the mirror, have some sort of internal argument with himself, and then run out of the room. And then I was back. I was back in my own skin, but I had a sudden urge to go out and try jogging. It was the middle of the night. I'd never gone on a jog before, but something in me was just clawing at the chance to go. Without giving it much thought, I put on some sweatpants, grabbed a face mask, and ran out into the night. I didn't think, I just ran. My feet seemed to know where to go. They took me out of my neighborhood, down a forest path, past the standoff cabin near the edge of the woods, and towards the old reservoir. The journey wasn't easy. Everything hurt. Strange pains and cramps spread through my entire body as sweat rolled down my neck. My body felt horrible, but it was as if something else inside of me was pushing me on. An extra giving of force that made each step feel good. I ran around the reservoir in that mixture of physical pain and spiritual calm until my pains became unbearable. My body overcame my mind and I collapsed in the grass. My face mask was drenched. Wasn't much of a point wearing it anyway. I spread out on my back and I tried to catch my breath. The stars were plentiful that night. They've been plentiful every night since the lockdown. But there was something else about them that night. It was as if they were watching me, as if 1,000 senseless eyes were staring down at me, waiting for my next move.
"This can become a temple,"
whispered the forest.
"All it requires is work,"
answered the stars. I got up and hobbled my way back home. Whatever force made the run to the reservoir so enjoyable wasn't sticking around to help me get back home. I went to sleep with my body feeling like I was in a car wreck. I woke up worse. Yet even beneath all the aches, I knew that something in me had to run again. I was going to build that temple. The last thing I wanted was for Liz to follow me out to the reservoir and make a TikTok video of me struggling or something. For the first couple of runs, I was scared that she might be following me. It did, however, become pretty obvious Liz didn't care. She just spent all of her days inside of her room, watching her shows or having obnoxious Zoom sessions. I could do as much running around as I wanted. It was more difficult keeping the secret from my wife. It just didn't feel right talking about jogging with the type of stuff that was going on in her life. One night when we talked, she was in the middle of watching an old man die. He was alone in his room. No one was allowed in with him in order to minimize the risk of infection. She just stood on the other side of that window, watching a man die on her break. I didn't want to drag my struggles with running into that. I just supported her, informed her that everything was peachy at home, and told her I was excited to see her in the next couple of weeks. She assured me it wasn't going to be a couple of weeks. The pain got more manageable over time, or my body just became numb, probably a mixture of the two. Whenever I walked, I walked funny, but on those runs, it was as if my body was a well-oiled machine. I was still absolutely drenched in sweat, and it made enough noise wheezing to scare off the wildlife, but whenever I was out there running, something in me just felt blissful, as if I was doing good work. As if I was making my way towards something holy. At some point, I started doing push-ups. I don't know which day it was. The runs were starting to blur into one long feeling of spiritual calm, mixed with the nuances of being trapped inside an aching mortal body. But at some point, I started doing push-ups. The sharp pain in my legs and abdomen were joined with a constant heavy weight in my arms. But whenever I went on those runs, that feeling would disappear beneath a cool air of satisfaction.
Why did you order a bunch of trash bags?
Liz asked me at the dinner table.
Trying to put yourself out for garbage pickup?
She quickly added, probably realizing that she didn't say anything offensive to me for longer than a minute. What trash bags? I thought. But that thought was immediately pushed away by a faint memory of ordering some online. Somewhere in that mental fog, I could recall looking for my credit card to finish off the online delivery. I could see myself stacking a couple of boxes of the bags in the garage. I just couldn't remember why. For trash, I guess, I mumbled, not wanting to trouble myself with the question too hard. Liz took me apart with those poisonous green eyes.
You'd better not be planning on running away with all that food,
she finally hissed and went back to her spaghetti. That night, I couldn't fall asleep. I guess somewhere in the back of my head, the question of my mental gaps bugged me. I went out on another run, hoping to clear my head. The beginning of the run lingered in the usual pained tranquility, but I just couldn't let go of the question. I just couldn't surrender myself to that feeling of peace while the question stuck around at the back of my head. Why did I order a bunch of garbage bags? Suddenly, there was a flash. I was still running. I could feel my feet hitting the trail. I could smell hints of the forest, but I wasn't there. Instead, I was back in middle school, standing in the changing room, everyone laughing, their eyes shining with malice. A horrid shudder traveled through my spine.
This can become a temple,
the crowd cheered in between bursts of laughter.
Or it can all burn.
I didn't think much about the garbage bags after that. Other questions arose. Why are there blisters on my hands? Is the reservoir running out of water? Why does my back hurt so much? But each one of them was struck down with a soul-crushing vision. Bad childhood memories that I've spent most of my life pushing away. The taunts, the shoving, the shame, and beneath it all, I could see Liz grinning, that stupid grin she had whenever she saw me eat. If I didn't ask questions, I would just be confined to the gentle mental fog. I could be at peace during my jogs. I stopped asking questions. Time strung itself around into one rhythmic run. A perpetual movement that existed beneath a bunch of phone calls and dinners and bar charts about infection rates. The details of everything seemed vague and fuzzy. I just knew I was leaving the house a lot. There were short flashes of memory floating in the back of my head, images of the city, echoes of someone yelling at me, the tingling in my fingers from chopping wood. But it was all tied to the run. It was all tied to one long run. Then, suddenly, it was this evening, and I was standing in my garage with an axe in my hand.
Mom came back home because I told her you had a mental breakdown,
Liz yelled from the kitchen. The axe clattered out of my hand. She's joking. I came home because they didn't need me anymore. Where are you, honey? I could hear my wife walking around the house. In the darkness of the garage, I could see a bunch of garbage bags. They were filled with something rough and jagged. I could hear my wife walking towards the garage. I quickly got out to stop her from seeing whatever mystery was hiding in the dark room. She was happy to see me for a second. Then her eyes filled with shock. Oh, sweetie, what happened to you? The blisters on my skin made my hands look 100 years old. My body was covered with bruises and I'd lost weight. The fact that I'd lost weight barely registered. She asked me if I was okay. She told me I'd look like hell. She told me that she was there for me if I needed to talk. A part of me wanted to deny that anything had happened. I could have just said everything was fine, but there was something in those eyes. Shimmered a love that beckoned honesty. I told her everything. I told my wife about the running, and the gaps in memory, and the confusion, and the bags in the garage. She listened patiently, occasionally pausing me to ask for clarification, but she listened. After I was done, she hugged me, told me I was loved, and then asked if I wanted to go see what was in the garage. Wood. The garbage bags were filled with wood. Not human heads or anything even remotely creepy, just plain old, roughly chopped wood. Maybe chopping wood was part of my workout routine, I thought. And then I was certain that it was. It didn't explain much. The memory map of the past 3 months still barely fit together. But at least I had a piece of the puzzle. We went upstairs and talked more. At first, we tried to make sense of what could have led me to do so much damage to my body. But ultimately, we ended up talking about my body. She told me that she loved me for who I was, rather than what I looked like. That she only cared about whether I am healthy and happy with myself, and that I shouldn't take Liz's jokes personally. That's just how teenagers are. Just as she mentioned Liz, the next door window opened up, and we could hear Liz sneak out. I'll let her have her fun. New case numbers are down to low double digits, my nurse wife said. Then we made love. We were both exhausted from our separate battles during the pandemic, but even in our tiredness, we were passionate. Now she's sleeping on my chest, and I should be happy. But I'm not. I keep on searching through those memories, trying to understand what happened during the pandemic. But the flashes of reality are difficult to tell apart from the strange visions. I remember running up the stairs. I remember lunging trash bags around, with the plastic about to tear. But all these memories stem from an unreal place. I don't know what I've done. But there is a murmur in my head, in my chest, that whispers that I've been a part of something bad. Something's about to happen. In any moment, I will understand the true extent of my deeds. But for now, I am simply left with the stars shining above us without any emotion, watching us.
The Cabinet of Fever Dreams is written and produced by Mike Jesus Langer and is brought to you by patrons such as Moo, Serafina L, Lucky J. Horton, Alan Rawl, Kus, Bob Conderick, Chicken Mixer, and Daniel Wengel. If you'd like to join these fine people in supporting the show and get early access to episodes along with a bunch of bonus content, drop by patreon.com/MikeJLanger. And so concludes this episode of The Cabinet of Fevered Dreams. Make sure to drop by next week for another episode of the 100 Eyed God series.